Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody, along with my co-host, Dr. Pettis Perry. Hey, Pettis, how are things up north in Bellingham, Washington? Have you gotten a lot of rain yet?
Jill, this is the Evergreen State, and it's Evergreen for a reason. We're always getting rain, but I'm very happy to hear that you're getting some down and down your way.
Well, and that might be one reason why we're having a little trouble connecting is that so far, I understand Northern California's had bomb cyclones and an atmospheric river is pulmoning everything. I can't even say that word. So the coast is pretty windy, and I hope we don't lose electricity here at the station.
Well, just stay safe.
Yes, you too. I'm really looking forward to our interview guest today, not only because he is returning to Be Bold America for a second time, but because his first interview, When the Right Isn't Righteous, is still one of my favorite interviews of all time. And also because today he's going to talk about how to create a more meaningful life. That has a special meaning to both of us, doesn't it, Pettis?
It certainly does. It brings me back to when we were at San Jose State together teaching that course.
Yes, yes, to hundreds of students who signed up for it, hundreds and hundreds. Our program today is Fall in Love, Have Children, Stay Put, Save the Planet, Be Happy. When the COVID-19 pandemic shut down our world, the forced sheltering in place with our families opened many people's eyes to how we are meant to live. Our guest says the only real how-to for a happy life is simple and exists in our DNA, a meaningful, loving connection to others. We evolved to feel happiest when caring for others, not when seeking power over them. May we all heed those words. Our future depends on it. Our bold guest today is Frank Schaefer, who is a New York Times bestselling author of more than a dozen fiction and nonfiction books. He's the son of the late theologian and author Francis Schaefer. He became a Hollywood film director and author, writing several internationally acclaimed novels depicting life in a strict evangelical household. Books such as Letters to Lucy and Why I Am an Atheist Who Believes in God, both of which I've read, by the way. And in his new book, bestselling author Frank Schaefer implores us to follow this directive, fall in love, have children, stay put, save the planet, be happy. We have big things to do. Hello, Frank. Welcome back to Be Bold America. I wanted to let you know I have already pre-ordered your new book.
Thank you very much, Jill. I appreciate it, and it's lovely to hear your voice again.
It's just such an honor to have you back, and sorry for the rough beginning. I'm actually at home because I was afraid of commuting in a horrible storm, so technology's great, but sometimes it's a little off sync. So
yeah,
thank you for being here.
Yeah, I was listening to you before, and the word you were looking for is pummeling.
Thank you. Pummeling. Well, you know, I've been hearing that Northern California has been experiencing that, but here on the coast, it hasn't come yet. It's like any minute now, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
so Frank, I'd like to introduce you to my co-host, Dr. Pettis Perry. He joined the show early last year or early this year. And so on your last interview, Pettis wasn't there. So Pettis, meet Frank. Frank meets Pettis.
How are you doing, Frank? It's a pleasure to meet you.
Very well, Pettis. And I didn't catch at the beginning. Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from Northern Washington State, up in Bellingham, about 20 miles from the Canadian border.
Yeah, no, I know just where you are, and I love that part of the world, so I can picture it. It's great to be talking with you.
Same here. Do you mind if I kick it off with the first question?
Go right ahead.
I listened to your show that Jill referenced, When the Right Isn't Righteous, that aired in April of 2019. I spoke with Jill earlier today, and I told her I'm still upset by the show, the meaning of the show. But I think it would be very instructive for our audience if you wouldn't mind spending a few minutes telling us about your background, because it is fascinating.
Sure. Well, you're asking me the same thing that my editor at HCI Press that published fall in love, have children, stay put, save the planet, be happy, asked me, and why I rewrote the foreword of the book in the last of 27 drafts in this 5.5 year project that ended with a total rewrite of the book or a revision of it after COVID, because in a weird way, COVID got everybody to do what I had been talking about in the book in theory, which is slow down, take time, look around, decide what's important to you, and you're going to soon discover that it's not to define yourself by career or fancy job title, but something much more straightforward and right in front of you, and that is the quality of your relationships with the people you're closest to. So it's interesting you asked the question, because she said, look, in the book you mention your background enough so people will be curious. You can't assume they've all read your memoir or other books by you. You have to take some time at the beginning and give a context to your remarks. So I'll do what I do in the foreword and just give you a thumbnail. I was born in 1952 in Switzerland. I'm pushing 70 now. And that was in a small fundamentalist evangelical mission started by my American parents, Francis and Nita Schaefer, who went over to Europe after the war in 1947 to help young people in cities that had been bombed to smithereens, like London and Berlin and other European capitals that had suffered the ravages of war. And then they stayed and they've made their own mission, a work called Libri Fellowship. Libri in French means their shelter. And so my childhood was spent in a small evangelical faith mission that nobody had ever heard about. And the only time we ever got meat was a little chicken with rice and gravy on Sunday. The rest of the time it was all casseroles. It was very obscure. My parents were totally honest, straightforward, old-fashioned evangelical fundamentalists preaching the love of Jesus, had an open home. All comers were welcome. I spent my childhood stepping over sleeping bags in the hallways if I went down to the kitchen to get a glass of milk at night. And then all of a sudden, in the late 1960s, my dad, Francis Schaefer, started to write books. And he wrote a couple that became bestsellers, Escape from Reason, The God Who Was There, and other books on evangelical Christianity and how it intersected with philosophy and culture. And his interest had been piqued in philosophy and culture by the questions mostly university students hitchhiking through Europe and crashing, to use the vernacular of the time, at Libri Fellowship had engendered in him when they asked him questions. And so at that point in his life, he could have been mistaken for someone center-left, perhaps, interested in culture, a Christian and evangelical, but certainly nothing to do with the religious right. And then Roe v. Wade came along. And at that time, I had gotten my girlfriend, Jeannie, pregnant, and we were 17 and 18. And soon after that, I was offered a job by an evangelical outfit in the States called Gospel Films to produce a film series based on my dad's work. And that became a very famous film series, still watched in many evangelical churches and schools and high schools and homes today, called How Should We Then Live? And that traced my dad's ideas about art and culture. And that whole project became a phenomenon. We played it all over America. We showed the movies in massive venues, including the Grand Ole Opry and Madison Square Garden and the largest venues in Texas. At that point, Dad was an evangelical star. And at the end of that series, we had an episode on the recently passed Roe v. Wade ruling by the Supreme Court legalizing abortion. And really, that got us, I suppose, into the very beginnings of the American anti-abortion movement, led at that time by Roman Catholics. After that, Dr. C. Everett Koop, who would soon become Ronald Reagan's Surgeon General, came and saw my dad and talked Dad and I into making a second series called Whatever Happened to the Human Race, that he, that would be C. Everett Koop, and my father wrote and narrated, and I wrote the screenplays for, directed, and produced. And when that came out a few years later, it really was the beginning of the evangelical anti-abortion movement. What it really was thinly veiled misogyny. It was a very typical evangelical production in the sense that the real target was women's rights. And that phenomena that the movie became really became the beginning of the tilt of the evangelical movement to the far right on one hand and the merger of the evangelical right with the Republican Party. That culminated 40 years later in the election of Donald Trump. And so since Trump was elected, unfortunately for me, a lot of this history has been resurrected, and I've been spending a lot of time on media and other places trying to explain and trace this phenomena. And what a lot of people didn't realize is that back in the day when we first made Whatever Happened to the Human Race, our big battle was not with the secular world or the National Organization of Women. It was with other evangelical leaders who would not take a stand against abortion, people like the Reverend Billy Graham, the famous evangelist who was pro-choice. Evangelicals don't know that. People like Dr. Criswell of the Southern Baptist Convention, who was pro-choice and also the pastor of First Baptist in Dallas and the president of Dallas Theological Seminary. Evangelicals don't know that. The editorial board of Christianity Today magazine, pro-choice. So our fight at the beginning was to get evangelicals on board with Sierra Coop's views, which were very strictly anti-abortion. And in the end, we succeeded. And we turned it into the litmus test it became that eventually put Donald Trump in the White House and other Republicans before him. And so my family history is one now that I look back on with some horror, because I'm a progressive activist who long since left the evangelical world, but unfortunately I understand it all too well. And so in Fall in Love, Have Children, Stay Put, Save the Planet, Be Happy, I paint that picture at the beginning saying, look, we sold fake family values back in the 1970s, which was actually just a form of misogyny and traditionalism, and really the beginning of the Christian nationalism you see today, with evangelicals challenging the last election, saying that Trump won, the anti-vax movement, all this other crazy stuff that's an offshoot of, unfortunately, what my family had so much to do with starting. But then the book goes on and talks about the values of our culture generally and the fact that we really now live in a time where career title defines us rather than who we are as people, where our aims and ambitions are more about career and power over others and making money than they are about the things that actually make us happiest if you study evolution. And so the book really has two parts. It's my own thoughts about being a full-time caregiver for the last 12 years of my three youngest grandchildren, Lucy, Jack, and Nora. And then in addition to which, the science and the reading that I have done for the last 5.5 years researching this book, trying to figure out why the caregiving I've been doing for my grandchildren is the single most satisfying experience of my life. So this book really fleshes that out in terms of studies of evolutionary psychology, who we are as people. And it doesn't call people to a better way, as if this is a moral crusade, but rather to really be happy, to find joy in life. And the only way to do that is to live in tune with who we really are. And who we really are is people who function best when we believe in something called the survival of the friendliest ethic rather than the survival of the fittest. When we give up striving for position over others and replace it with striving for relationships with other people that sustain us, the giving and receiving of love. And the interesting thing that I found is that love is a thing. It's not a sentimental feeling. It's an actual thing in your brain that releases hormones, can be measured, that is there in parenting, is there in adoptive parents, and there whenever we make connections with people. So when I talk about having children, I'm not just talking about actually physically having children. That's great. And I've had kids and grandkids. I'm also talking about all of us becoming caregivers of each other. For instance, tonight, you and Jill are my caregivers because you're helping me talk about this book to people. You're giving me the opportunity any good parent would give a child. And I'm your caregiver because I care about your show, and I'm on it because I believe in what you're doing. And this is a mutual exchange that goes far past simply me trying to promote a book, and gets into the very essence of who we are, which is the survival of the friendliest, helping each other. The only reason any human beings have ever survived is because we are not all warmongers. We're not all predators. We don't all rape people. Most of us actually are caregivers. And the sad thing is about our corporate culture and American capitalism is that it has moved us away from who we function best to be as humans, which is what my book is about. And I hope it's a blueprint for a post-COVID America, both legislative and personal and moral, that will bring us to a new understanding, a better understanding, and encourage people who are trying to have families, who do want to care for the people in their lives, who are interested in loving relationships. And that can be gay, it can be non-binary, it can be traditional care bonds, couples like me and my wife, Jeannie, who have been together now for 52 years. It can be people with no children, but who are caregivers of other people around them and live by that ethic. And so it spreads a wide net, and I hope includes a lot of people. It comes out November 2nd, and it's the culmination of almost 6 years of work. It's taken me longer because I have sciencey friends who teach at university level who kept checking the manuscript, liking it, and telling me I had to read one more book before I closed out this or that. And then suddenly that turned into 5.5 years of work, and then COVID came along, and I realized that Mother Nature had sent us a memo to basically do what my book is going for. And now, lastly, and then I'll finish this long discursive description, lastly, weirdly enough, all the headlines in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Network News, is about how many people are resigning from their jobs because they are sick of the grind, this low-pay environment for blue-collar workers, and then for people in the white-collar world, the managerial world, they want to stay home now and keep working from their home. They don't want to go back to the way things were. They, in fact, are discovering, because of COVID, the very things my book is advocating. So it's an interesting time in American history. It's weird to have written a sort of a prophetic book for the moment we're in before it actually happened. I'm not saying I'm a prophet or foretold COVID, but I certainly did foretell that people are getting sick of judging everything by corporate values that are only interested in shareholder profits. We've got to start being interested in our spirit and in what makes us human. End of story.
Well, Frank, that, you know, I am so delighted and honored that you think of our show that way, because I have followed you for years and read your books, and I was just delighted like a little child when you first said yes to my show back in 2019. So I just thought, you know, this is a wonderful way to be an example of what you're talking about. And now we need to take a station break. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. We're speaking with Frank Schaefer, and our topic today is on his newest book, Fall in Love, Have Children, Stay Put, Save the Planet, Be Happy. You may learn more about Frank and his books at frankschaefer.com. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Hello, K-Squid listeners. I'm Todd Hartman, and each weekday at 4 p.m., I bring you a different perspective on the news than you're likely to hear on most media outlets. Please join me on KSQD Santa Cruz, your ink spot on the dial for the Tom Hartman program, heard now for the first time ever in the Monterey Bay Area at 90.7 FM, weekdays at 4 p.m. That's Progressive Talking Conversation with me, Tom Hartman, weekdays at 4 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM. Tag, you're it.
Today, our topic is fall in love, have children, stay put, save the planet, be happy. And we're speaking with the New York Times bestselling author, Frank Schaefer, on his newest book of the same name. Now, Frank, just to start talking about your...
This is KSQD Santa Cruz. We are experiencing some power issues here at the station, and we will get back to the program as soon as possible. We are going to work on getting this program back on the air and hopefully getting our station back on the air. This is KSQD Santa Cruz.
Well, I think our power might be back. Dan is our program engineer. Dan?
We do have power back, and it sounds like we've got Frank calling right now, so I'll get him on the board.
All right. Thank you, Dan. And Pettis, are you back too?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Well, listeners, we lost power at the station because of this huge storm, and so everything went down. However, we do have a generator, and I guess the generator kicked in. So now we're back on air, and Frank should be back too. Frank, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yay. Well, this is what it's like when you're doing a live show in the middle of a storm.
I get it.
So I think what my plan is that we'll just go through and not break at the 5:30. We already had our break. We'll just start up again. Yep, we had our break there. So we were talking about you started 5.5 years ago on this book. And What got you to think about writing it?
Well, very straightforward. You know, my son John was in the Marine Corps. He went off and fought in Afghanistan, came back alive, thank God, got married, has had three children over the last 12 years. And I just decided to help him and his wife, Becky, with childcare, as did my wife, Jeannie. And we have been the full-time caregivers. And then something really surprising happened. You know, what it started out as thinking I was doing a favor to John and Becky, I realized I was happier than I'd ever been in my life. I've done a lot of different things, including being a father of my own children, but that was more during the striving years when I was on the road 6 months a year and really regret the amount of time I was away. And here I got a second bite at the apple, this time almost reparenting myself, giving these grandchildren the attention that I'd wish I'd had the time to do for my kids and wished my parents had done for me. So, you know, I've learned something in these 70 years I've been pushing along, and I applied it to my time with them. And I talk about this in the book, Fall in Love, Have Children, Stay Put, Save the Planet, Be Happy, has a lot of information in it. But part of it is just storytelling about what it's like to be the grandfather of three wonderful little children, what I've been doing with them in terms of creativity and parenting and care. And I hope people can learn something from that and be inspired and encouraged to do things with their own children and grandchildren. And so it comes from a very personal place, actually the most personal place, because there's nothing that is closer to me and to what I believe and who I am than these three little kids. And they're literally my best friends, and I love them. And then, you know, when we sheltered during COVID together, I was teaching Lucy, who by then was 10, to cook, and Jack and Nora were doing a building project with me in the barn. And, you know, so it became Camp Schaefer. So essentially that's where the book comes from. It came from that place of childcare. And then I essentially just kept working on it and writing it early in the mornings when I get up to write before I started doing the care for them. And now they're all in school. The care is mostly school pickups and bringing them home to my house to read to them and feed them and do these sorts of after-school activities. But before they were in school, Jeannie and I were the full-time caregivers, and I did as much as she did. This wasn't, you know, a thing where my wife did more than me. I probably actually put in more hours than her. So the big surprise was just the immense joy and pleasure, as well as some frustrations and tiredness and all the rest. But the pleasure I got from this really made me ask the question, what is it about this that is so head and shoulders above every other experience I've had in this life? And that's where the book comes from.
Pettis, I know you had a question that you wanted to be sure to ask. Let me hand it over to you.
Thank you, Jill. First of all, Frank, the book that you've written is a beautiful piece of work. And it really is in line with what Jill and I tried to teach students at San Jose State when we taught the Creating a Meaningful Life book. And I remember hearing Steve Jobs just before he died, talking about this same thing, that he wished that he had spent more time with his children. But what I would like to talk to you about is the women who came into your life and how you talk about women being leaders who can lead us better. They're better equipped, if you will, to lead us out of crisis, and why feminism is a gift.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a whole chapter in my book, because one of the things that's really crazy about our present time in history is this idea that somehow nurturing and childcare is not something men do. And this simply is a lie. You know, I grew up in a farming village in Switzerland, and it might have been in the, you know, it was in the 1950s and early 60s, but it could have been 100 years before that. Life hadn't changed much in this little town. There were no men's roles and women's roles at all. And this is traditional of agrarian society. You know, the women were out there picking in the hay with the men, milking the cows. You know, the men were doing household chores and fixing up the barn and the house and fixing the roof. And, you know, the women were helping to slaughter the pig and taking care of kids. But so were the men. So were the grandparents. It literally took a village. And, you know, this idea of a kind of a holistic life, old people were not shut in communities where you can't even live there if you're under 55, and kids were not put in daycare centers. Villages raise children, communities raise children. And that's because women, human women, have always needed help raising children, not because they're feeble, but because we humans bring all our babies into this world premature, because we have big brains, and it would kill all women to bear a child with a fully developed brain and head. It would be too large. It would kill us. So unlike other primates, our babies are all born premature. What does this mean? We have to have long childhood. What does this mean? Women never have been able to raise children by themselves. They've always had either the father around or grandparents or a village or help or sisters or nieces or nephews. And if you look at human evolution during the hunter-gatherer period, it's very matriarchal because everybody's pitching in taking care of kids. That's the job of the community. Before modernity, the hardest job in the world was keeping a child alive. Disease, accident, animals, lack of food, having to move around, etc. And so it took the whole community. Women are natural leaders. If you look, for instance, at how we survived COVID around the world, the country's led by bombastic fools like Donald Trump and Bolsonaro in Brazil. People died by droves because they sort of confused their macho leadership with denying the disease. The countries like New Zealand and other places that were led by women did much better. And if you look, for instance, at the structure of our culture, of who really keeps things together, who are the caregivers? It's women, often underpaid, often women of color, and so forth. But the women actually run the show. The men sort of ponce around and pretend to be in charge, and they have all these patriarchal theories that come out of Christianity and other things. But really, this is a modern phenomenon. When you look at the history of the human race, the women are central. So I look at the advent of feminism not as a cultural movement or a political movement, but really the next step in human evolution, all about our survival. Because if we don't let women lead, if we don't put women in charge of things, if we don't have the place that women need to be in to nurture and care for our entire culture and to guide us and lead us, we will die. And, of course, the planet is dying. Because of mostly male-led, rapacious, predatory business and practices that have literally raped the earth. And so the turn to female leadership is not an option. It is an absolute necessity. And in my chapter, I talk about the women who have been so important to me in my life, Jane Stuart Smith and Betty, a lesbian couple who were living in La Brea, undeclared. They weren't out of the closet, but they lived together. Everybody knew they were an item. They introduced me to so much art and to music. I talk about Mrs. Park in the little boarding school I went to in England called Great Wallstead. I couldn't read. I couldn't write. I was severely dyslexic. And she taught me to sing in little operettas, you know, the Marriage of Figaro and Gilbert and Sullivan things. Showed me that listening to her play the piano and singing things, I could learn words, that I wasn't a complete idiot. She made huge breakthroughs for me. I talk about my wife and the fact that she sort of became my therapist, you know, my lovely original San Francisco hippie genie who came to La Brea at 17, and how she just wouldn't put up with my patriarchal evangelical bullshit and basically got me out of that movement and talked some sense into my head and everything that went into it. So my view of feminism is highly male in the sense that I know that actually feminism so far has been more for men than it has for women. Women are still being sexually preyed upon in the workplace. Women are being underpaid. Women are being disrespected. Caregiving is being disrespected. Being a parent and a mother is being disrespected. And part of what I'm hoping my book does is, first of all, tell men that if they don't get into the caregiving and the sharing business, they're idiots, because it is literally the best part of life. They will have eaten the wrapper and thrown out the candy the way Steve Jobs talked about. But secondly, I just want it to be known that our future lies along the path of not just respecting women and including them in the male firmament of business, but rather changing our priorities entirely. So it isn't a question of including women and their family interests and being scared because they might get pregnant and have a child. We reverse everything. And we basically make paternity leave as normal as maternity leave, and it's paid. We get free medical care for people so they have real choices. We help single moms so they're not working three low-paying jobs to make ends meet. We understand that the whole human race stands or falls by the quality of the family and the relationships we have and how we help people. And you can call this a feminine point of view. It's not. It is a survival point of view. The feminine point of view is always about survival. The male point of view cut off from the feminine point of view that's about survival and relationships always is sterile. It's the opinion that brings us to war. It rapes the earth. It sees the earth as something to be pillaged. women are always about survival, and of course that's why they make great leaders and did during the COVID era. So my chapter on feminism, I hope, challenges us to understand that feminism is an evolutionary step, and now it's time to really try the real deal, which is not about feminism, but about egalitarianism for all of us. And that includes men who are so sad now that they're being shoved back into workplaces. They're missing the kids they helped nurture during the COVID pandemic. There are thousands of men quitting their jobs or doing what my son John did, saying he's agreeing to continue in a managerial position in the tech company he works for on the condition that he only has to come into the office one day a week and can keep working from home. Because while I kept doing childcare for him, there he was. He was able to have lunch with his kids, come over, be with them. He doesn't want that to change. So men can learn from the nurturing process themselves, and women have always been the leaders in this area.
It's beautifully spoken. It's certainly well within the belief system that I have. I spent a lot of time raising my son, and it was the greatest gift that I was given was time. To be able to be with him and to experience his upbringing. So I'm right in here with you, and it's something that I certainly espouse. And I think that you do drive home the point, the points that you're trying to make. It's a very well-written book. Jill?
Well, yes. You know, I have a question, Frank, and that is that I'm an only child, and this is something that I've dealt with my entire life, is that I, as an individual, am very family-centered. I'd love a family-centered life. And aside from my husband, who understands the importance of family, none of my other family members, all three of them, they don't care about family at all. It's not important to them. Do you have any advice for someone who's family-centered but's in a family who's not?
Well, you know, I'll go one step further and just say I look at my son Francis, who's now 50 years old. He's been a teacher for more than 30 years now. He went to the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown and was set to go to the State Department, tried teaching for a year to help pay off some bills, and has stuck with it. And now he's in charge of the science teaching at a wonderful high school in Beverly, Massachusetts, and he does incredible things with the students. He is unattached. He's single. He's going to probably stay that way. He does not have children. He has tremendous family connections with us. But, you know, when I talk to the students he teaches and I talk to their parents often, and I'm not making this up, the parents get tears in their eyes when they talk about how Francis opened doors for their children and thus for their family, how he cooks for them over the weekends. Their children come to be tutored by him, high school students, the kind of colleges they managed to get into because of his tutoring in math and physics, doors he opened to people who have now gone on to incredible careers in science because of this high school student, this high school teacher who opened doors and cooked wonderful meals for them so they would not study when they were hungry and distracted, and played music for them and took them to movies and just went the extra mile. And so, you know, I'm the parent of three kids and five grandchildren. He's the parent of hundreds. And so, to me, this is a real illustration of the fact that whether we are attached or with a family that cares about family or not, we can make parenting connections with people that have nothing to do with biological parenting. You know, there's a study I cite in my book where they studied gay adoptive fathers, for instance, and found they have the same brain changes and the same hormone levels and the same scannable references in their brain as new moms do who are breastfeeding babies if they have close connection with kids that aren't even their biological kids. And I think the same thing can happen in a teaching relationship or in a mentoring relationship or simply with neighbors. So when I talk about family and staying put and putting roots down, this certainly applies to a much wider range of people, and that would be your case. Be able to do things with other people who you may or may not be biologically attached to, they become family, they become community. It doesn't only take a village to raise a child. It takes a village, as it were, and a community to have a meaningful adult life as well. And so the thing that you're missing, that you're talking about, is perfectly available to you and to anyone else who reaches out and understands that we really can have relationships that are sustaining with people, sustain them and sustain us. And in fact, we get so much more out of that then, you know, if we keep everything divided into nuclear family, okay, that's my family. Now these are strangers. Now these are neighbors. Wipe those categories out. See everybody around you as a potential family member. And then all of a sudden you realize it's not about biology. It's about connection.
Wow. I just think I had a huge paradigm shift. That was tremendous. And I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with author Frank Schaefer, and you're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. And I'm also going, because of our loss of power, and I'm worried about losing power again, I think we'll just keep going. Pettis, do you have a follow-up question?
Thanks, Jill. You know, Frank, what you were just talking about, I see manifested in Jill, and I'm glad you said the kinds of things that you did. Jill came into my life at a time when I was, you know, really hitting rock bottom. And she's always been there, and she's provided, you know, a considerable amount of nurturing and support as I've gone through what I've had to go through over the course of my lifetime. So I'm glad that you acknowledge that. It also reminds me of my life growing up as an African American and how I came from a small family, but we always talked about our extended family. And we would call friends Uncle So-and-so or Auntie So-and-so. And we really embraced them as part of the family. And I still, to this day, here in Bellingham, have those, you know, those same kinds of relationships. And, you know, my son is in San Diego, I'm up here. And those relationships are part of what helped to sustain me. So the points that you're making, I think, are spot on. And I'm glad that you made them today as a way for people to get a paradigm shift who may not be as fortunate as some who do have a large extended family like some people that I know. So, you know, thank you for that. I'd like to ask you about your actual blueprint for rebalancing life so that we bring a different way of being as we come out of the pandemic and how we can really embrace. And you talked a little bit about it in terms of the shift that people are going through and wanting to now be more engaged with their children. The old paradigm was you couldn't do that. And now we're seeing that we can do that. I've been working virtually for more than 20 years now, and it's completely changed my life. And they're finding that virtual work is actually causing people to be more productive than being in the office. So there are these huge shifts. So I'd like to know your thoughts, if you have more blueprint about what we might do as we consider going forward.
Yeah, well, you know, the biggest shift that has to take place, the first thing before anything else, is we have to consciously sit down and redefine what we mean by the word success. And we need to do that as individuals. We need to do that as a country. We need to do that politically. We need to do that within corporate America, whether it's blue-collar workers, whether it's white-collar managerial people, whether it's people of color, whether it is white people. It doesn't matter. Our life is going to depend primarily upon how we define the word success in terms of our happiness. If we define success as something that flies in the face of everything evolution crafted us to be, and that is basically what I say in the book, we are love addicts. This is the one addiction that doesn't kill you, and it's insatiable. So when you design your life to try to go cold turkey from the addiction that nature gave you, which is love addiction, we have terrible results in the number of suicides and teen suicides. 4 times more cops kill themselves than die in the line of duty, et cetera, et cetera. Measure it wherever you want. When we start living life contrary to the way we evolved to be, which is as caregivers and nurturers, we will wind up lonely. We don't make the connections. We are alone. We keep moving for paychecks instead of moving or staying close to family or moving to family. We move for the wrong reasons. I'm not saying we don't need jobs and we don't need to earn a living. I'm talking about more than we need. that kind of idea that success is this ephemeral thing that has to be chased and chased and chased, rather than seeing what's right in front of your own face, which is your neighbor, your community, your family, the people you have connections with. So that's the first thing. The second thing is legislatively, we need to push for the funding from corporate America and also from government for top-class education and child care, so that is no longer this horrible, heart-wrenching struggle as parents drop their kids off far too young most of the time because no one gives them a break in the company. I mean, how many corporations have nurseries with top-flight care right in the building or in the factory so that parents can be close to their kids and take a break and go have lunch with them? Why not? It's a no-brainer. This would be something that would save everybody trouble and hours of heartache and grief. What we need is an agenda that essentially says, look, if you leave your job for a few years as a male or a female or a non-binary person, gay, straight, black, white, I don't care, and come back to work, there will be no discrimination against you for having opted for an extended parental leave. It will be normal. You will be encouraged to do this by corporations and also by the government and the way we fund people. We look at single parenthood and we'll say, hey, listen, if you're a teen and get pregnant, we're going to help you go to school. We're going to provide some child care. We're going to care for you so that you finish your education and can also be a parent. Look at the other end of life. We're going to uplift caregiving for people who are elderly and say, listen, caregiving is part of the cycle of life. This is not going to be a low-paid job anymore for people who can't get other work. It's going to be a highly specialized field. We're going to care for people well. This is going to cost money. It means that billionaires won't be building their rockets for their private space programs. They're going to be taxed, and they're going to be taxed hard, and they're going to help pay for programs that help millions and millions and millions of ordinary Americans live decent, humane lives instead of a few people, the 1% sucking up all the oxygen in the room. So we're going to need a social shift. It starts with redefining success as success in relationships ahead of success in career. And then everything that follows from that in terms of funding, legislation, programs, and above all, we have to change the idea of what it's cool to do, to put it that way, that it is cool to take off time from work, that fathers, just like mothers, that single moms and parents are helped to do this so that a resident going to, you know, medical school who is in the most intense part of their medical training, If they want to stop and have a family for a year and take care of that child, why can't they come back and complete their training afterwards? Why isn't this normal? Why isn't it normal for women anymore? Here's a question for you, to have children during the arc of fertility. It doesn't happen anymore. Everybody's running off for IVF treatments, $38,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 at least to just start, $180,000 price tag to have a baby when you're 47 because your corporation never made room for you. And said, listen, you know, if you want to start a family, go start one when it's easy to do. We've lost touch with the reality of who we evolved to be. We've lost touch with our biology. We've lost touch with our psychology. We're living in this false pro-career environment that denigrates everything to do with childcare and uplifts everything to do with making money and greed. We flipped exactly what the values are that would actually make us happy. So There's the program is a no-brainer. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. As soon as you redefine success as success in relationships, then everything flips.
Thank you, Pettis. Well, you know, Frank, we know, Pettis and I know, because we taught the Creating Meaningful Life class, that loving connections, loving others, love is a verb, that is really how one designs a meaningful life. And yet, we have such a strong force in this country, say Fox News, that just wants to divide and destroy us. We had a president that just wanted to destroy our institutions and our society. We have well-funded movements that are fighting for the opposite. What are your thoughts on that?
I just think the hypocrisy is massive. I mean, think about the right wing, pro-life, quote-unquote, but unwilling to pay for anything to do with child care to actually help people have children. You know, we tell people, have an abortion or go broke. Well, that's a nice choice. You know, have an abortion, but if you have a baby, we're not going to give you any medical care. We're sure not going to pay for the delivery. You know, have an abortion or give up going to college and have that child. These are, you know, they talk about being pro-choice. Okay, these are not choices. And the right talks about family values. These are not family values. So I criticize the right and the left on this, because the left has gone whole hog into the careerist maelstrom as well. You know, the cool people are all the billionaires with startups on the West Coast. You know, the ordinary people, not so much. We have to admit it. The left has also been swamped by this careerist ambition, and it's hurt everybody. I think that what I'm talking about in Fall in Love, Have Children, Stay Put, Save the Planet, Be Happy may be one of the few areas of life where we can actually lure some of the people on the right away from the groupthink of the Trump cult and this anti-democracy movement that the Republican Party has become, trying to suppress black votes. I think we can lure people out of that who really would understand the value of personal connection, because not everybody on the right has given up on that. They love their children. They want to have families. They may be gun-toting crazy people thinking guns will keep them safe, when actually that's not how we stay safe. But there's an area of overlap here. So I think there has to be some climbing down on both sides when it comes to this. And that is, look, the left says they're all about people, but they've completely bought into the kind of race when it comes to money, just like the right has. And the right is totally hypocritical in its so-called family values that actually don't support families. Listen. It's my contention in this book, and I talk about it in the book, that if you designed a culture that was outwardly, overtly, aggressively anti-female, anti-child, anti-family, the United States of America right now would be it. And yet, look how the left and the right are fighting within the Democratic Party and stalling a huge legislative agenda that Joe Biden has tried to put forth bravely, that actually addresses stuff in this. Rather than getting it passed, moderates and folks on the left don't have the vision to work together to get this passed. And instead, what they're doing is guaranteeing the return of Donald Trump to the White House. Because when the midterms are lost, and they will be unless this legislation is passed, it is going to be the fault of Democrats who couldn't get it together. So it's not only on the right. The right is, and Fox News are a bunch of lying weasels who have undermined our culture, and they're total hypocrites when it comes to family. But the left, pardon my English here, better get their shit together. Because the fact is, we got one bite at this apple, and if Joe Biden's presidency is not successful, if he is not able to pass the legislation which he wants to pass, which people will see the impact of in helping their families, helping their children, child care, environmental protection, and the rest of it, people love these ideas. And the only thing getting in the way is a lying Republican Party that is no longer a political party. Instead, it is just a white nationalist and Christian nationalist movement masquerading as a political party with Trump as the leader, and a lying, lying set of beliefs that have to do with conspiracy theories and utter BS about having actually won the election. And then on the other side, Democrats who can't get their act together. And so we, who believe in falling in love, having children, staying put, saving the planet, being happy, whether we're on the right, left, or middle, are kind of stuck. Because Joe Biden stood up and said, look, here's the legislation we need to pass to move America forward. And he was absolutely right. And if you look at it, a lot of his infrastructure centers around doing stuff for families, helping people with children, all kinds of tax credits for kids that are incredibly, have an incredible impact on our culture. We need more of that, and we need more unity and more clear explanations from the Democrats on what it is they're doing that advantage everybody, including all the people who voted against them but who have kids that they love and they want to care for. So we really need to stand up now and just say, look, Joe Biden is our shot. Whether you agree with everything he's doing or not is not the point. Would you rather have Donald Trump back? And if you don't want him back, then keep doing what you're doing. Because unless some of this legislation passes and people see how it benefits them personally, we will lose the next round again. So I would say part of my agenda in Fall in Love, Have Children, Stay Put, Save the Planet, Be Happy is support Joe Biden. And I talk about some of his legislative agenda in the book, saying, look, it's a good first step in terms of family policy. We need a lot more of this. Come on, guys. Let's do something for the people. And you're going to find, to your surprise, that there's some folks out there who think of themselves as Republicans who will peel away from this cult, the Donald Trump cult, and begin to understand that the Democrats are not the work of Satan, but actually care about some things they care about. For instance, real child care, real family values, working women. There's a lot of working women on the right who need help. And if they started to get some from the Democrats, they wouldn't change their minds entirely, but they might vote a little differently in the next election. And our elections have been very close. So, you know, you peel away a few percentage points, you talk to a few white evangelicals and get them to see that actually doing the work of Jesus has something to do with caring for children and families and women and all the rest of us, and you can win another election. But if we keep this wrangling in the Democratic Party going much longer, game over, is my opinion.
Right, right. Well, one thing that we do, you're so inspiring, and I think people listening to this and that who will listen on the podcast will understand what they need to keep doing, stop doing, and start doing. That's usually what we talk about now. But we have 1 minute left. Is there any closing? I think I need to wind up the interview. Frank, thank you so much for hanging in here with the storm and the electricity going out and being so inspiring and being here on Be Bold America and providing me a personal paradigm shift. Thank you so much. Pettis and I just enjoyed this.
Absolutely.
Thanks for helping me out. And I hope people get the book. And I am reachable. You can all get to me. I'm not hard to find. And I do book clubs and I answer my email. So please reach out if you like the book.
And it's frankschaefer.com. And I just wish we had more time. So thank you so much for being our bold and impressive guest today, Frank. We're delighted you carved out some of your valuable time from your family. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next on Be Bold America on Sunday, November 7th at 5 p.m. will be The End of White Christian America. We will be speaking with Dr. Robert P. Jones. Dr. Jones is the founding CEO of the Public Research Institute, Public Religion Research Institute, and a leading scholar and commentator on religion and politics. Robert writes a column for The Atlantic Online on politics, culture, and religion. He is frequently featured in major national media such as CNN, MSNBC, NPR, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and others. So join us on Sunday, November 7th at 5 p.m. to learn about The End of White Christian America. Or you may catch up on this interview later with our Be Bold America podcast found on your favorite podcast platform. And I want to give a special thank you to Be Bold America's program engineer, Dan Nowacki. He had to do a lot of fast work today with our losing electricity at the station. So thank you so much, Dan. And thank you to our program director, Howard Feldstein. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for Reflections on Buddhism. My name is Jill Cody.
And I'm Dr. Pettis Perry.
And thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep, stop, start.